This program is brought to you by Resonance FM. If you like what you hear, please support our work by making a donation at resonancefm.com/donate.
Okay, well, this is a recording for Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM, and it is fundraising week. Okay, so I'm talking to Paul Robertson on the on my mobile phone. Hello, Paul.
Hello, how are you, William?
Yeah,
how's not, London in lockdown?
Not bad. I mean, it's well, it's getting a bit fraught the second time round. I must admit, it's making me a bit nervy and irritable, I must say.
Well, we're snowed in for the third time in 3 weeks. There was 8 inches of snow inside my front door, and my husky loves it, but I don't.
Right, you have a husky?
Well, I have a Uitenhagen, which is partly husky, partly Malmut, and partly German Shepherd. But yes, he's my constant companion here. Yeah.
What's the breed again, did you say?
A Uitenhagen.
Gosh, I've never heard of that.
It's a breed that isn't really recognised, but that they are deliberately bred to look like wolves.
Okay.
And he's a beautiful dog, and he looks like a wolf, but you could feed him and keep your fingers.
Right. So, are you on your own, apart from you? It's just you and the dog?
Yeah, I mean, I live in the gallery here at Lost in the Apple.
Yeah.
And it is on a hill higher than Arthur's Seat in Edinburgh, which is pretty high.
Yeah.
And it's in a former Knights Templar village. And there are other houses here, about 50, but we're set back. And I cannot move my car today. It's under 8 inches of snow.
Oh, really?
And because the hill is so slippy, the gritter can't get up it. So I'm down to tinned soup and bread.
Right. You can't get deliveries or anything?
There is no chance of anyone getting up that hill tonight.
Right.
No chance. Well, I mean, maybe Sherpas and crampons.
Right, right.
And even my dog might be struggling to get up it, I suspect.
So how isolated is... I mean, are you part of a village, or are you kind of...
Yes, but there is no public transport here. The nearest shop is 4 miles away.
Right.
The nearest train is 4.5 miles away, and the nearest bus is 3 miles away.
Wow.
So it was probably the most stupid thing to do in the world, is to open an art gallery with no public transport.
Yes, yes. What on earth prompted? Why did you choose such a place to open an art gallery?
Well, one is cheap. Ah. Right? I mean,
yes, but these. Well, that's.
I mean, where in London would you get 2,500 square feet, plus a car park for 8 cars, and a 1,000 meter square garden with a wall all around it for £800 a month?
Right. But, yes, but the downside is that who's going to visit you there? I mean...
Well, we have openings and people come and I put on minibuses. And then people come by appointment. Obviously not at the moment. We've just had an Ian Hampton-Finley show that 7 people saw. I'm putting up a Joseph Boyes show at the moment for my own collection. And I'm not expecting many people to see that.
Right.
But it will be there. And, you know, when COVID allows it goes, or at least the infection rate has gone just low enough that people can come again, that people can come with masks and see the show.
Right.
And I have put a show on in the local forest as well.
Okay.
Where a concrete poet called David Bellingham and I placed artworks in the forest with their permission, and people could find them just walking down and around.
Yeah, yeah. So just so you just to reiterate for people that don't know who you are, you're Paul Robertson, and your gallery is Lust and the Apple. And
yes.
What's the name of the village again?
Temple.
In
Midlothian. It's 14 miles south of Edinburgh.
Right. Okay. And how are you bearing up during this period? How's it going up there for you?
Well, I haven't been in a room with a friend for 4 months, and I haven't really seen anyone apart from neighbours from a few yards away for weeks and weeks and weeks. But you know what? I'm lucky in that I'm a reasonably together person.
Yeah.
And whilst I do miss people, and I'm a very sociable person, I'm not in any bad way. I'm far more disturbed by the fact that my football team is not allowed to play games up here. And I won't go on about that, but...
Go on. Who's your football team?
I support Falkirk, which is a team that has about 4,000 regular supporters come to the games, but we are currently languishing in the lower leagues in Scotland.
Right.
And people in England, they may or may not know, Celtic went away to Dubai, and their players caught COVID and came back.
Oh, right.
And politically in Scotland, the Scottish football authorities shut down the lower leagues as a sacrifice so that Celtic and Rangers, the big clubs, could keep playing.
Uh-huh.
And the Scottish government let them off it. But I'm sure you don't want a conversation about football in Scotland.
Well, no, it's all right. It's interesting. No, it's good to hear news from north of the border. That's all right.
You know, I mean, we're a good football team, but we were relegated 2 years ago, and then last year the league was ended early. Then we were looking very likely to get promoted, and it's you know, it's difficult.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I like football a lot, and I found it was a good way of motivating myself through a week, knowing that there was a game to watch, even if it was online on a Saturday or a Sunday.
Right.
And I haven't seen a game now for, I think it's 6 weeks now, 7 weeks we've been shut down.
Right, right. So Falkirk are still playing or not?
No, we're not.
They can't play.
Today, they've announced today that there's at least another 2 or 3 weeks before they're going to allow them to go back to training.
Right.
And there hasn't been a single case of COVID transferred from one team to another team, as far as we know, in 1,000 games.
Right.
So this is political.
Political. Yeah.
But I think that's probably enough for your listeners. I don't think they want to hear any more of that.
That's all right. Okay. So how do you get by? I mean, do you survive on the income from the gallery, or you?
No, the gallery makes absolutely no money. I lose money on the gallery. Every single show I put on costs me a few thousand pounds.
Right.
And I've put on a lot of young artists. I used to put 3 shows on at once, an established artist, often quite well known, so the likes of Lawrence Wiener.
Yeah.
Or who else? Probably Leibovitz, Cisco Jimenez from Mexico. I recently had Gregor Schneider showing here.
Okay.
Bruce McLean has shown here. I mean, we've had about 50 shows since we started here in 2015.
Right.
And there's been a fair number of quite well-known artists showing.
And do the artists all do they travel to you? Do they come to you? Or?
No. A lot of the shows. For example, Lawrence Wiener, very graciously gave me a work for the garden, so he basically sent me an email with the drawings of what I had to do.
Yeah.
And it's a piece that's painted on the wall of the garden, and the wall is a dry stone dike, really, that later on they put concrete to hold it in place and fall down. And Wiener gave me a piece about transformation that specifically was for the site and is there. Sadly, he didn't give me the piece to own. He gave me its permanent permission to show and exhibit. Otherwise, he'd be giving me a very expensive artwork. But, you know, hey,
yeah.
It's all quite good having a window when I walk out my back door.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so you basically, so you're a dealer as well. You're a book and art dealer?
Yeah, I've been doing that now for 20-odd years.
Yeah, and so that's how you make your money, I suppose.
Yeah, it's a precarious living.
Yeah.
I mean, I barely make 5 pence a week, but, you know.
You barely make what?
fivepence a week, you know. It's a good week's fivepence profit.
I'm joking. Okay. I was going to say, I thought you were a successful dealer. You've had very substantial pieces on for sale, haven't you? You've sold huge, big collections for quite a lot of money.
Yeah, sometimes. And, I mean, I pride myself in finding things, and normally I would travel. I mean, I go abroad once a month on average, and that's the only way to find these things, because very few of them are, in fact, in Britain. Brexit is about to screw that up for me, and it's going to screw it up for all of us, of course. But in addition, COVID's made it much more difficult. So I'm relying on contacts via the internet.
Yeah.
Although sometimes you go to auctions. I mean, yesterday, 3 days ago, I bought a copy of Eduardo Palazzi's Bunk, which was published in 1970. It's 45 lithographic reproductions of the original collages he made in the 1940s and 50s that he claimed later on were progenitors of pop art. Now, there's a little bit of rewriting of history by Palazzi in this. He did give a lecture which he claimed was called Bunk at, was it Gallery One?
It could have been.
Gallery One, I think.
Yeah.
And he claims that he showed these then, and that this was the pre-runner to pop art.
Right.
In truth, he did show these works, but he didn't try really to introduce them as populist imagery, although they were all collages that he cut from American magazines and British magazines.
Yeah.
And one of the collages happened to have the word pop in it.
Yes, I know that one. But he did a collage in about 1948, didn't he, which shows Mickey Mouse saying the word pop.
Yes, but I don't think these had... I read an article only yesterday, quite an in-depth scholarly article, in which the person who wrote it claimed that it was really later on that Palazzi rewrote his own history and claimed that he had used these works to introduce popular imagery into the art world.
Okay.
And in fact, actually, Richard Hamilton probably has a much better status as the person who really brought pop art to Britain. Although they were together, you know, they were in the same group of artists and knew each other. But it's interesting. I mean, I could tell you other examples where histories by living artists have been rewritten by them to pretend that they've done more. Art and language, I think the group is something where the existing two people who keep going and use the name Art and Language are not the same as the group that existed as a conceptual art group in the early 70s.
Right.
And yet, you know, they continue to use the name. And that's, I think I've said this on your program before, it's a bit like the drummer and the bass guitarist from Status Quo keeping going and claiming the name.
Yeah.
You know, They're different.
Yes, and then sort of reforming with about sort of two people from the original lineup.
Yeah. Well, if you go to the Tate Gallery, I've seen the Tate Gallery show works claiming to be Art and Language. Now, Art and Language only formed in 1968 as an actual publishing deal with the name Art Language. And yet, I've seen works on the walls of the Tate from before then, claiming their Art and Language works, when they're individual works by members who joined Art and Language later.
Right.
So you have to be very careful. And sometimes galleries have, you know, a motive to sell these things as, you know, misidentified. I mean, you get a lot more money from selling something to the Tate Gallery claiming it's Art and Language work than one by an individual who later joined Art and Language.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's made me very popular with Art and Language.
Yeah, so that's something you got at auction recently, this Bunk portfolio.
Yeah, I bought Bunk this week. I haven't got it in my hands yet. It was pretty nice. It was sent in America, and I thought, you know, I'll get that.
Yeah.
You know, whilst I say it's, you know, it's not quite what it was, and it wasn't quite the progenitor of pop art that perhaps Palazzi wanted to, it's still an important publication.
Right.
It's still 1970. and is important at that point, you know, and yeah. it becomes quite influential. And I'm not fond of Leighton Palazzi when he made these large public artworks.
No, no.
But early work is good. And these
yes,
collages,
yes.
They are good works. I'm not criticizing yeah. them. I'm just saying they've been misrepresented a lot of the time in you know, literature.
Yeah. Well, as I said, this is it's a fundraising week for Resonance.
Uh-huh.
And one of I've put it well in the past.
You've done this to me before. You've baited me into buying something on air.
Well, that's right.
Know,
yes. Well, because
no.
I can hold you to it because we have all these witnesses. You see, who will listen to this program and they can swear to it that you said yes to the offer. So, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, but I've got a funny feeling I know what you're going to offer me.
Okay, well, we could talk about it
right.
first, because normally we would have an auction, and that isn't possible at the moment. And normally we might have a series of gigs or performances around London to raise money, and that also isn't possible. But I decided to put up a multiple, which I've put on Instagram, which is at William English 2000, where you can see a teddy bear. But it's not just any old teddy bear. It's a teddy bear multiple by the art group Irwin. And I sort of mentioned it to you in passing. I think I sent you a text mentioning this thing, and you said you've got one as well.
Yes.
You have? Well,
yes, it's a teddy bear that has an arm band on it, which yeah. is part of the pretend totalitarianism of the group NSK,
yeah.
which is Slovenian, and people will possibly know of the band Layback,
yeah.
that's a very popular. In fact, I was telling someone only this afternoon about how they went to North Korea and played the Hall of the Sound of Music because it was the only music that they could get the North Korean regime to agree that they could play.
Okay.
But, yes, it's a teddy bear. But did you know, you won't know this, there is actually a fairy tale story about that teddy bear, which one of the NSK affiliate writers wrote. And there should be a little booklet somewhere that you can find that tells the story of that particular toy.
Ah, well, I don't know anything about that. I haven't got the book. Perhaps you could tell us what the fairy tale is.
I don't know the answer to that because I think it's in German.
Oh,
my German isn't good enough.
Oh dear.
But I'm sure the teddy bear comes out well at the end of it. It's probably leading a horde of fascists or something because.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of NSK's imagery is because Slovakia was both invaded by Germany, Nazi Germany, and the Soviet bloc, the totalitarianism for them is an imagery they like to play with.
Right.
And it's, of course, ironic.
Yeah.
But then some people misunderstand it and they actually think they are fascists, but
right.
I don't think they are.
No. All right. Well, let's hope not, for the sake of the bear. But the bear, the teddy bear, does have a sort of an armband with a black cross
yeah.
on it. But it looks more like, you know, the British Red Cross. It's like that.
It's Malevich's black cross.
Oh, is it supposed to be Malevich?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Malevich's black cross because they use that regularly within their iconography and their paintings.
Right.
Irwin, if you look at a lot of Irwin's paintings, you'll find that.
Okay. And if I'm correct, I think you paid £100 for yours.
Yes, I did.
When was that?
About 3-4 years ago, I think.
Okay. Do you know what the edition size is?
No, I don't.
No. I mean, I can't find any reference to it. I mean, there's websites devoted to Leibach and NSK and so on, but I can't find the teddy bear anywhere. The teddy bear seems to have a sort of downturned mouth. Do you think that's?
I'm just trying to remember, actually. I'm just going to, because I'm on my telephone, I can look up my website.
Well, where is the bear? Where is the bear now? Where's your bear?
It's sitting in a plastic box in my storeroom.
Oh, I see. So you can't refer to it then? You can't get the actual...
No, but I can't see a photograph of it because I've got it on my telephone, if you give me a moment.
Ah.
Somewhere here.
Okay.
Should be. Oh, here we go. Right, here we go. Its real name is Ursula Nordingbær. So I imagine I've just butchered that language.
The bear is called Ursula.
Ursula Nordingum.
So it's a female bear then?
I presume so. And the book is called Nothing But a Toy.
Right. Well, this is priceless information.
Written by Svetlana Makarovich.
Right. What? Well, that's the artist. That is the artist who created it.
That's the artist who wrote the story of the bear.
Right.
I don't know who actually designed the bear.
No.
Do you think it's particularly unhappy-looking bear? I would say
The bear itself is all right, but it seems to have a downturned mouth, and it's so long since I've seen an actual teddy bear that I don't know if that's common to all of them.
Well, it was made in 1999.
Yeah.
So, in that sense, but I don't know the edition size.
No. I mean, I suppose teddy bears in general possibly... Perhaps they all have downturned mouths. But anyway.
I think they do have that sort of two diagonal lines coming up to a vertical line. I think that's probably standard teddy bear design.
But coming up, but which way is your V then? Which way, is it pointing upwards?
Well, it's upside down V coming up to
an upside down V,
line that goes to the nose.
Well, that's mine as well. That's what mine looks like. But it's quite sort of strange in a way because it gives the appearance of sort of being a bit of a glum bear, doesn't it, really?
I think you're projecting.
Okay.
This is all very Freudian.
Right? All right, yes, you could.
Did you have a teddy bear?
I never had a teddy bear. No, this could be it.
I think you're missing. Why don't you buy it for yourself? I mean, you know, it's nice to cuddle at night. I mean...
Yeah.
When the wife's not talking to you?
Well, the bear won't talk either, will it?
No, but, you know,
all right.
It doesn't stop me talking to the dog, you know.
No, okay. So, all right. So, but you seem to be quite attached to your bear. I think I offered you this one, and you sort of said, well, yes, you like yours.
Well, mine's on the website, but I have it as out of stock, despite the fact I still have it.
Ah.
And the reason that was that I didn't want to sell it.
Oh, that's interesting.
But I use my website sometimes just to, you know, keep track of everything I have anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, I put the 10,000th thing up yesterday, which was a poster by Fiona Banner.
Right.
But, you know, there's actually about 15,000 things on that website.
What's your website? What's the name of your website?
Unoriginalsins.com.
Unoriginalsins.com. Okay. So,
yes, there's a thing here. There's Lost in the Apple, and there's unoriginalsins.com.
Yeah. Is the bear on that website?
Yes, you can see the bear.
But you haven't got a... there's no price on it?
No, because I didn't want to sell it.
Right. Okay. So you like it that much? You've got all these items, but
I mean, you know, I do actually collect. I mean, I collect Christian Boltanski.
Yeah.
I collect Ian Hampton Finlay.
Yeah.
To a lesser extent, Lawrence Weiner, but I do collect Fluxus and other things.
Yeah.
But, you know, like everything, I don't know if you know Coombe Transmissions. They had that famous exhibition at the ICA called Pornography.
Yeah, yeah.
And at the bottom of the poster, it says everything, including the participants in this exhibition, are for sale.
Right.
And that's true of everything in this world. As much as I love some of the things I have, everything has a price. I mean, I could do with a new car. Buy me a brand new Range Rover and, you know, you can have one of my big collections.
Yes, but the crucial thing at this point is how much is the bear?
Well, I think I paid £100 for it.
Yep.
Right. So, are you trying to flog me the bear online?
Well, it sounds like you're very attached to it. Perhaps you need two. Perhaps you'd like to buy another one.
I would consider it.
Right.
I mean, you know what I'm more likely to do is buy it and give it to someone as a present.
Well, exactly. That's the kind of thing it is, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Well, you can make me an offer now.
£100.
You'd pay £100 for it?
Yeah.
Thank you. That's a good start. We can start at £100.
Oh, really? You're negotiating up from there, are you?
Well, it's supposed to be an auction for charity, you see. It's a registered... Well, it's not exactly an auction, but I've got it on Instagram, and I've said offers, you know, and I wouldn't take less than £50 for it.
Now I find that out, so I don't have to do 50. As much as I like residents, I'm not a fool.
No, but you've offered £100 now, so that's a good start. Yeah. And so
what I would say to your listeners is, it's actually a really lovely object multiple. It's by a group that are very collectible. I mean, NSK are pretty good. And it's, you know, as art objects go, it's quite lovable.
Right.
I mean, you know, I'm used to buying paintings and menstrual blood. So a teddy bear is almost at the other end of that range.
Yeah.
And I think...
even with a black armband?
Well, the black armband, it's not... I know it's got the overtone of fascism with the mention. They do play that ideology.
Yeah.
Not ideology, sorry, iconography. But it's Malevich, you know? It is a deliberate reference to, you know, the hard-edged geometrical type of work that really, in many ways, is a form of... conceptual art, even though it's not normally, you know, put into that genre.
Yeah, yeah. Well, speaking of blood, as we were, there are, of course, the three Hermann Nitsch prints, which I have for sale.
Well, I'm interested in those, but you're not going to get a deal with me online. Are those part of your auction?
No, but I would include... What I would do is, in some sort of... I don't know what we call it, but I could, if I sold you those, we could include the bear, and then I would pay Resonance whatever it is you paid for the bear, you see. But that might...
I think the problem here is that, despite the fact of me boasting about buying big expensive things last week, I am a little bit short at the moment. I've just been buying... Matthew Collins is selling some paintings on Instagram that are well worth buying, by the way.
Right.
I don't know if you...
But this is... I have to interject that this is very typical sort of dealer spiel, isn't it, really? I mean, you tell me that you've bought this Palazzi last week, which is, it must have cost at least £1,000.
That was a bit more than that.
More than that. But then, of course, if I pitch something to you, you tell me you haven't got any money.
Well, I don't, because I've just bought a Palazzi.
Okay.
And this is
dealer speak, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it's dealer speak. But, I mean, you know, I'm reasonably fair. I mean, to you in particular. I mean, other dealers, I don't really care.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I like those Nietzsche. I've never in my life been successful selling anything very much by Hermann Nietzsche.
Right.
And I did actually contact him 7 years ago to put on a show with him, and he agreed to come and do a painting show, although he's very old now.
Yeah.
And his son really does the painting, and he sits in the background and points with a cane or something, what colour should go where. And then he got offered €250,000 to go to, I think it was Sweden, for a major retrospective.
Yeah.
So he cancelled on me, so I should really hold a grudge against him.
Yes.
But I like the early work, but it's not for everyone. I don't know if your listeners know Nietzsche's work. They might know the music more than the early works, but these large processions in which animals are killed and the blood poured over naked people who are strapped to crosses,
right,
all in a massive parody of both a Bacchanal and Christian iconography. And Nietzsche came out of the Viennese Actionists, which initially were a reaction against the Catholicism and very heavy-handed nature of the Austrian state.
Yeah.
But when they split up as a group and no longer were the Actionists together, Nietzsche went and bought a Schloss called Prinzhof, I think it is.
Right.
And he has these massive bacchanals, 3-day actions where people would get drink and food and music, and they do seem to be quite impressive, actually.
Yes. It's strange. It's funny because I've just almost got to the end of reading Dracula for the first time.
Really?
Yes. And it sounds fairly similar in feeling to that, especially being that sort of part of the world as well.
Grand Grenouille, that's what it is.
Yeah.
The bloodbath that's at the end of.
Well, especially with castles and things as well.
Well, Dracula's a very good book, isn't it? I mean, it's remarkably modern in its tone when you read it now.
Yeah.
And an epistolary novel, I believe, is probably the classification on it. It's entirely written as letters, isn't it?
Well, it's letters and telegrams and sort of diaries and so on. Yes, it keeps hopping from one to the other. Each character is sort of recording their account of the story, sort of, yes, as you say, via telegrams and this, that and the other.
Well, the clever thing about that is it allows you to know what other people are thinking.
Yes.
So as a device, you don't, you know, you can jump from character to character rather than being in one person's head and having to make interpretations.
Yeah. And it's interesting that it literally cuts from one to the other as well. It'll just stop sort of one passage and then it goes, you know, Jonathan Harker's journal, and then just starts that for a few paragraphs and then cuts to the next one. So it's almost like a sort of film in a way. It's quite cinematic in that sense.
I wonder what the economic impact of Dracula has been over the years. If you added up all the costs of all the films, the films, the books and the cartoons and all the spin-off stuff. I mean, it must be in the billions. It must have. I mean, so is Frankenstein, of course, maybe. Shelley's Frankenstein.
Yeah.
But it must be one of the most important books ever written, surely, just on those grounds.
I suppose so, yeah. And there are still these events, aren't there, in Whitby, kind of, what is it, steampunk events, where sort of people wear Dracula-like clothing, and I suppose they go up there to greet the boat again or something. But
well, the mother of my son was a dentist, and she had a practice in a pretty poor part of Edinburgh as an NHS dentist. And she would once a week have, usually a girl, I think, come in and ask if she could file their teeth into a point so that it would look better as a goth.
Oh, my God.
It was a regular occurrence. My daughter's part of Edinburgh where she had to give out toothbrushes. Because there was usually only one toothbrush in an entire family. And everyone shared the same toothbrush. Oh, three God. Generations in one house.
Right. Wow.
Never get that in London, do you?
Well, you probably used to in the East,
probably do, yeah.
In parts. But you're not actually from that part of the country anyway, are you?
Well, I was born in Birmingham, but I've lived in Scotland since 1968.
Have you? Okay.
So whilst I despise Scottish nationalism and separatism, I do find myself identifying really as Scottish in my culture.
Right.
Although I was beaten up so many times when I was youngster because of football that I bloody-mindedly support England when they play Scotland at football.
Okay. Right. You don't sound Scottish to me, but perhaps it's quite subtle.
Scottish people often think I'm English.
You're right.
But it's weird because when I go to the football, I revert to habits that I had when I was young, when I went to the Falkirk games, and I would talk in a form of English-sounding low Scots.
Right.
It's very weird. I mean, you know, people from Falkirk put the word Ken at the end of lots of sentences.
Oh, yeah.
You say, oh, you see that guy there, you Ken, right?
Yeah.
The weirdest thing ever, it means you know, right?
Yeah,
that
you,
man there,
you can,
know.
yeah.
You can, but it's a habit that you get round about the Central Belt.
Yeah.
And there are other mysterious words that you don't get anywhere else in the country. One that I used to love is that John Byrne wrote a TV series called Tutti Frutti, and Your Cheated Heart. And one of the characters in Tutti Frutti is called Fudd, F-U-D.
Yeah.
And every time this was on, and it was nationally shown as a very popular TV series. I think it was breakthrough for Emma Thompson and also a breakthrough for Coleraine.
Okay.
Robert Coltrane.
Robbie Coltrane.
Robbie, from Coltrane, yeah. But every time they said FUD, anyone from the centre of Scotland would have just laughed their head off because it's slang for female anatomy.
Oh.
I was nice there. I didn't use the word.
Yes, thank you. Before. Yes, don't go too far. We're not allowed to. Yes, thank you.
No, but the word, well, the word FUD now has to go added to that list because
right.
Everybody who listened to this now knows it's a Scottish slang word.
Right.
But only in the central belt. If you go up to Aberdeen, no one uses it, you know?
Yeah.
Round about Falkirk and Stirling and these bits in the middle. No one in Edinburgh or Glasgow uses it.
Right, right.
Are you uncomfortable now? Should we move on from that conversation?
I was slightly nervous, wondering where it was going to go, but it's all right. You've managed to evade
it. Objectively intellectual, I think, the way we discussed that.
No, we can't afford to get complaints from Ofcom or whatever it is you see. So
no, and I didn't swear.
We can't.
Quite
no, thank you. That's fine.
No, I was aware of my surroundings or my.
Yeah. I thought I could just play a track.
Look, I could do a deal with you on the niche, but ask me next week. I have to find out what money I've got.
Oh, yes, do let me know about the niches. And then what we could do is we could include the bear in part of the deal. And then I'm just going to play something for you now. Wait a minute, I think it'll work.
But what I would say is, I'm quite happy to speak
I don't know if you can hear this. Hang on.
Oh, baby, let me be your loving teddy bear. Put a chain around my neck and lead me anywhere. Oh, let me be your own teddy bear. I don't want to be a tiger, cause tigers play too rough. I don't want to be a lion, cause lions ain't the kind you love enough. But I just want to be your teddy bear. Put a chain around my neck and lead me anywhere. Oh, let me be your teddy bear. Baby, let me be around you every night.
I just thought I'd sort of put that in as a...
Was that Elvis's version?
Yeah, indeed it is, yes.
I never loved Elvis. Did you love Elvis?
No, not at all.
I think my problem was that in the 1970s he'd already turned into that slightly overweight, slightly, you know, kitsch version of it all. And that always affected my view of the earlier stuff. And there's no doubt he was very sexually attractive and groundbreaking when he first came through.
Yeah.
But equally, you know, I mean, he stole a lot of what made him popular from black culture.
I suppose.
And if you believe Public Enemy, they claim he was a racist.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Oh, it's a line in... gosh, what Public Enemy song is it? Elvis was a hero to most, but he's still a racist something to me.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. I think the only thing that made an impression on me was Heartbreak Hotel. I think sort of I heard it sort of long after long after it came out, of course, but it still struck a chord. I thought that still sounded good, you know. But yes.
What was your first concert? What first concert did you ever go to?
The first concert?
Yeah. What band did you first see live?
That's a difficult. Well, my dad took me to see Count Basie at the De Montfort Hall in Leicester, and we sat on the stage, and the drummer was a guy called Sonny Payne. Who was an incredibly flamboyant drummer. He sort of, like, absolutely phenomenal. You know, he did all these things. He could throw sticks in the air and catch them again and keep on drumming and so on. Uh-huh. And because we were on the stage, at the end of the show, I was able to get his autograph. And so that was probably my earliest sort of experience of...
to some extent, you've always liked experimental, difficult music. I mean, let's assume... It wasn't just trad jazz, was it?
This was my dad was trying to. I think he was sort of educating me. He took me to a John Barbirolli conducting whatever it was, the London Orchestra, or that was also at the De Montfort Hall in Leicester, which a friend of mine in Leicester tells me that they're now going to change De Montfort because they've decided that Simon De Montfort was some appalling racist. His history goes back to, you know, sort of like, I don't know anything about it, but apparently it's like the statues. Apparently they're going to change the name of the De Montfort Hall. So.
Yeah, I welcome that mostly. I did a thing with an artist, Sasha Huber, who went around the world protesting at Louis Agassiz, who I believe has more things named after him, the geologist, than anyone else in the scientific world, including, I think, a crater on Mars. But Agassiz was a horrible racist who kept slaves and justified it by scientific treatises in which he claimed the shape of black people's heads proved that they were subhuman.
Right.
So she used to go around and photograph herself naked in front of all of these Agassiz places.
Yeah.
And there's one in Edinburgh called the Agassiz Stone, which is very important geographically, geologically, because it was where he ultimately proved that glacial movement and glacial formation was really a much more important effect on the Earth's, you know,
development
than the other thing, right? Development. So anyway, she would stand in front of these, and we did this at 6 o'clock in the morning. She was stripped naked, and she was very tall. She's black. She comes from Haiti, although she lives in Finland. And she would take a photograph of her facing the camera, side on the camera, and back to the camera. And this was what was regarded as the slave pose that when they took photographs to sell you, they would do. So we had the cameraman there in the morning at 6. I had a duvet wrapped around her. She was stark naked. And we would suddenly remove the camera. I'd step out of shot, and she would go side, forwards, back, right, and take a photograph. But she kept on messing it up. So we were on the fourth or fifth attempt to do it. I pulled back the duvet, and she was taking the shot just as a cyclist came by and was on his way to work and cycled into a tree because he couldn't believe what he was seeing in the morning. And he picked himself up and just went away. He never said anything.
Yeah.
So I always think that was one of the more amusing art events I was ever involved in.
Right.
There you go.
Isn't there some sort of monument in Edinburgh, a bit like Nelson's Column, isn't there, where there's some enormous pillar with a guy standing on top of it?
Yeah, that's at St Andrew's Square, and I'm hard pressed to tell you who it was. But yeah,
isn't he due for sort of being wrenched off his post as well?
I think there are debates about doing that. In the main, I'm completely in favour of removing them or adding an explanation of what they were.
It's
in America, it's much more different, though, because these Confederate monuments were quite a deliberate attempt to rewrite history after the defeat in the Civil War.
Right.
And they were usually made out of very thin metal, cheaply done and subsidised by people who wanted to, encourage people to basically be pro-Confederacy, which really is pro-slavery.
Yeah.
So pulling all of those down, I think, is no great harm to the history of the world.
No.
I completely and utterly agree with that.
Right. We've got to be careful here. This can be construed as incitement to terrorism, I think.
Oh, no, I've no intention of asking anyone to do it, you know, I mean...
No, but you're suggesting it's a good idea, so...
Well, I think that one could make a case for it, shall we say that?
No, I quite agree.
Is that safe enough for you?
Yeah.
I mean, we recorded this on the day that Trump is up for his second impeachment.
Yes, that's true.
Day, everyone.
I mean,
if there's ever a day that one needs to be reminded of the horrors of racism and how a large number... nowhere near a majority, I think, but a large number of people in America can see white supremacism as a goal that they rather like than, you know.
Yeah.
There's no better day in which to do that. And probably after this conversation's over, I'm going to put on MSNBC and watch the impeachment trial. I would imagine it'll be starting soon, if not already.
Is it? Is it? Okay. You can watch it live. Yeah.
Well, yes. I mean, there are ways of me watching these things live.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You have a sophisticated internet aware audience, don't you?
Sure. Yeah.
But, I mean, no. I mean, it's. Lockdown is awful. And there are an awful lot of people out there who suffer a lot more than me. I'm not really complaining. I mean, I spent the first lockdown writing 1,250,000 words on the Inhabit of Finlay for a website collection. This time I've been less motivated. Yeah. I found it much harder this time. But I'm lucky. I've not been ill.
No.
I'm not suffering financially that badly from this. If anything, I would say that other collectors are stuck at home and they've been buying stuff.
Yeah.
So I have no grounds to complain in that way. And I really think for some people this is utter misery. If they're at home and lonely,
yeah,
and they've no support mechanism, it must be utterly terrible.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And,
exactly.
You know,
yeah.
At least I have a dog.
Yeah. What's the dog called? I don't know if you got his name.
The dog is called Marley, but Marley was a rescue, so the name came with him. I would never call the dog Marley.
What, is
I mean,
that,
we all know that dogs called Marley
Is that spelt like Marley's ghost in Dickens?
M-A-R-L-E-Y.
Oh, Bob Marley. Yes, the same spelling.
The dog had been in the pound 5 times.
Right.
And when I found him, he was running up and down one of the main roads in Edinburgh called Leith Walk at 7 in the morning, because every chance he got, he would escape the small flat that he lived in. It was hardly ever walked. And when I got him, I phoned the guy because he was chipped and told him about his dog. He never came back to me 5-6 days. And then after when I did get him, he said, oh, you can hold on to him for a while. You know, it's okay.
Yeah.
So I bought him off him, and I like to think the dog has a better life now. But that dog, I was walking one day in a local sort of foresty dog walking bit, and this woman came around. He went, Marley, and threw her arms around him.
Oh.
And she worked in the local pound, and she knew him well because he'd been back and forth to the pound 5 times.
Right.
You know, if you get a husky, you've got to walk him 2-3 miles a day. You can't, you know.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, it's a lot of work. I mean, he's a big, strong dog that has to be,
yeah,
you know, kept fit. So,
yeah.
And today I managed only 1 kilometre in 6-7 inches of snow. Because it was very hard going, I mean, walking in snow. And so he's not had anything like what he should have had for a walk today. But he's the most gentle and lovely dog, unless you're another dog or you're a small mammal.
Right.
Or a sheep.
All right.
Hands up, this is a hold up. This is a hold up. Hands up. Hold up your hands, this is a stick up. Stick up your hands, this is a hold up. Give me the money. Ooh, I must get that right. Give me the money. Hands up, this is a stick up. Give me the money. Hands up, this is a stick up. Give me the money. Hands up, this is a stick up. Give me the money. Oh, yes, that's it. Hands up, this is a stick up. Give me the money. Hands up, this is a stick up. Give me the money. Hands up, this is a stick up. Give me the money. That's it. Hold hands, this is an upstick. With your stick, this is a hand tool.
I beg your pardon?
I mean, this is a stick up. A hold stick.
A hold stick?
I mean, a hand stick.
Oh, I see. You mean this is a hold up?
Yes, that's right. It's a hold up, yes. Out with your hands and give me your money.
How?
What do you mean, how?
How do I give you the money? With my hands up?
Well, you put your hands up and give me the... No, you give me the money and then put your hand... Oh, I don't know. Work it out for yourself. But give me the money.
No, I don't think I will.
Come on.
Well, why should I?
I've got a gun, stupid.
Yes.
And it's loaded.
Yes.
And it's loaded.
Yes.
With real bullets. And if I fire it, you'll be dead. Oh, sprawled down the floor. Dead.
Well, go on then. Shoot me.
Do you mean that?
Yes.
Well, cross your heart and hope to die.
Cross my heart and hope to die.
Oh, stop messing about. Give me the money.
No.
But you don't understand. I don't want to shoot you.
No, I know that.
You see, you're supposed to be terrified of my threat.
I see.
And I waggle the gun,
mm-hmm.
and you give me the money,
mm.
and then I run out with the bag.
Of course.
But if I take the wrong one, you call me back and give me the right one.
Yes.
All right, then, shall we do it again?
Right.
All right, close your eyes. I won't go all the way out. I'll just go a little way. Up with your hands and give me your money. Ooh, what'd you press that for? It's the alarm bell.
I know.
Oh, the police will be round here any minute.
Well, you'd better be quick.
Well, they'll take me away and put me in prison.
Well, hurry up and go away then.
What, without the money?
Yes, hurry. They'll be here in a moment.
No, I won't go.
Get on, you idiot. I don't want you to go to prison.
I know you don't.
Well, go away then.
No, I'm not going.
Go on.
No.
Go on.
Won't.
Go on.
Shan't.
Oh, all right then. Take the money.
Thanks.
Just to remind people that, this is fundraising week on Resonance 104.4 FM. And I've been speaking to Paul Robertson up in the, what do we call your part of the country? Is it the Low Hills or the something?
No, it's the Highlands is called the Lowlands, but this is really the Central Belt.
Okay, all right.
70% of the population of Scotland lives in the Central Belt. Because Glasgow and Edinburgh are only 40-odd miles apart.
Yeah.
And then there's one or two other places. So if you think of Scotland as a stretch right across the middle, which is Glasgow and Edinburgh, as two poles of a magnet with people living in the middle. And then you have really Dundee and Aberdeen up to the right, higher up.
Okay.
Inverness to the left. And then it really can be quite low population densities.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not dismissing people who live in these areas. There are people, of course there are, right? But the 70% of people live in that Central Belt area.
Right.
And we've all got snow, you know?
Yeah. And I'm offering this teddy bear, a multiple by the art group Irwin, and Paul has very generously offered £100. We might get a bit more than that, in which case I might come back to you, Paul, and see if you're prepared to go even higher.
No, I'll probably stick at that. Right?
All right.
I'm buying it as a commitment to your cause, and I would probably give it away as a present to somebody at Christmas, actually.
Right.
Because I have my own.
Well, it's a very fair offer.
It's been delightful. I hope I haven't wittered on too much.
Not at all. No, it's great to hear from you. And we'll speak soon. I shall call you next week, perhaps, about the Hermann Niches. You might become the owner of this Irwin teddy bear very soon.
Okay.
All right, Paul. Thanks a lot. And I'll speak soon.
You're welcome. Yeah? Keep well and everybody keep safe. I know that this is miserable, but it will end sometime. I really think it will, and I'm looking forward to travel again.
Yeah, and we'll see you.
I'll be in London when I can.
Right,
I can.
Okay. Great. All right, Paul.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye. Bye.
This program has been brought to you by Resonance FM. If you like what you heard, please support our work by making a donation at resonancefm.com/donate.